So when I'm thinking hustle, it's like...
So if I had to word association, activist hustle, I would just say action every day.
You hustle to get something that like is not on the road already. Like you have to go off of the road to find it.
For us millennials, financially is something that we have come to just have to experience. In the United States, the way the economy was, we immediately just have to hustle. If you are part of a marginalized community, then hustling is part of your everyday life.
And when you're off the road, like you have to keep yourself going. So a hustle is just really trying to make it happen.
The activist part, I feel like that's the action.
And like in an activist way, I think it's an activist is a person who's trying to make an impact in their community. So if you're hustling to try to make an impact in your community, if you're working hard and finding ways where there weren't already ways, then you're on your activist hustle.
There's a lot of talk, you know, but that activism piece is that you are living it out. In every decision you make, you're thinking about how is this promoting my values and things like that, and the hustle part is just like, that's every day.
Action
every day.
You're about to listen to an interview that highlights the dopest of millennial activist projects from across the country to feed the inner activist in all of us. Welcome to The Activist Hustle.
The Activist Hustle is brought to you by Blueprint Leadership.
Awesome. Hi, Rachel.
Hey, Lena.
So I am so excited for episode number one.
Me too.
The Activist Hustle. What do you think you're looking forward to the most from this episode?
I'm most excited for people to hear it and hear what the structure of our show is going to be for the rest of the season.
Yes. Okay. I'm really excited to highlight different activists. I think that's every time that I think about the interviews that we've been doing, I'm just like, oh, I'm so excited for others to hear this story and to get to know this person. So I guess there's a couple of things that I want to say to the listeners. And I think the first one is, this is our first episode.
Yeah, please bear with us as we are on our own Activist Hustle journey and learning how to do this podcast. None of us are professionals yet. So and just keep that in mind.
So today on The Activist Hustle, we have Angelica Maria Aguilera, and she is a biracial Chicana poet and a teaching artist.
Wow. Could you just explain to me what exactly like the definition of Chicana is?
Oh, yeah.
I feel bad because my mom has Mexican roots. I know it has something to do with Mexico, but...
So Chicana is, yeah, I think it comes from, yeah, it's being of Mexican origin or descent. And I think, you know, in places like Chicago or California, where there's really large Mexican population, it's a term that they use to identify themselves.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's interesting to think about where I am. So I live in Boston. I've lived in Chicago. And Chicana culture is not really a predominant one here. There's a lot of Salvadorians, there's a lot of Brazilians, and we all have our different terms of how we identify within our Latin culture. But Chicana is one of, like, definitely the strongest. So shout out to all the Chicanos out there listening to our podcast today.
Yeah.
I hope there's many of you. So a little bit more about Angelica. She has appeared in Button Poetry, Slam Poetry, Inc. She's performed at TEDx Talks. She's the author of Dolorosa, which is this book that I actually have, and I can show it to you. And I encourage other people to buy. It's a really nice poetry book. She currently attends University of Massachusetts. She's getting her degree in English and Linguistics. And she's originally from Los Angeles. So that's really interesting to me because, you know, in our first episode, we talked about how you, Brandon, and I are not from Boston. Yet here we are, and this is the place that we've chosen to do our activism. And Angelica kind of fits that category as well. She's not from Boston, but, you know, you look up poets, Boston poets, she'll be either performed last week or will be performing next week. She's out there.
Yeah, and she's wildly talented. I had a chance to watch some of her poetry online, and I also watched her TED Talk. She did a TED Talk recently, and
so good.
She's so well-spoken. She is really passionate. It comes through in her poetry and in her TED Talk, too, which was, like, kind of versatile.
It's so, and you know what else I love? I love that she always brings it back to the culture. Mm-hmm. Like, she's going to Mexico in a week or two for this poetry festival. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, yes, bring it back to your roots. So I'm really excited for the listeners to dive into this episode with us. Anything else that you think we should add?
I don't think so. Just get ready.
Okay, let's do it. Vámonos.
Hello, Angelica.
Hello, Lina.
Thank you so much for joining us for our inaugural episode.
Thank you.
I am so excited to learn about your work and to share it with the world. Should we just like jump into it?
Definitely.
Yeah. Okay. So let me start off with an initial question. What does activism mean to you?
Absolutely. I think there's all these definitions out there about what activism is or what it's supposed to be. But I think actually there are so many ways to be an activist. And I think a lot of us think of activism usually as one thing, or meaning that you're at a protest with a sign. And I think that really limits activism and really negates all the things that activism can actually be. I think a big thing that is not considered activism generally, which is so important, I think, is just people of color, minorities, existing as themselves fully and embracing the hell out of that in a way that's not assimilating, in a way that's completely unapologetic, I think is in many ways is the epitome of activism. And I think we're seeing that a lot with young people, and who used to have this idea of, I need to act a certain way to be successful. And, you know, my parents did that, and now I need to assimilate and I need to be what other people want me to be. But I think saying I'm not going to assimilate, I'm going to be my entire self and also exist in the world and do amazing things, I think is, again, the epitome of activism. I think that's activism we need, and is not always completely recognized, but is so important and makes people feel so empowered, especially when I see other Latinas doing that. And I see them wearing their big hoops to work, and I see them talking Spanglish, and I see them bringing their whole selves. I think, yes, you
absolutely
better go.
I totally agree. It is so empowering to be your full self, and that in a way in itself is activism. Mm-hmm. How do you feel like you do this through your art, though? Like, tell us a little bit about what you do.
Sure. So I am a spoken word artist. I'm a poet. I'm also a college student. But I think ways in which I've done this is that more recently I've been getting more and more opportunities, which is really exciting. But with these opportunities, I usually held in wealthy spaces, in wider spaces. And there comes this moment where when you're being invited to these spaces where you're like, I need to act a certain way to belong here, or I need to change myself in a certain way to belong here. And I think just showing up into those spaces as your entire self is really important. And I think just not listening to that voice that says you need to change in order to be respected as an artist, you need to change in order to be respected by these wealthier by these white people, I think is really, again, I think is the epitome of activism. And I think, dressing the way that you would usually dress, speaking the way you would usually speak, and not hiding any part of yourself to do that. And if that means also writing on the topics that are closest to you that maybe you don't think will be received the right way, as long as you're staying true to yourself and you're speaking on things that you know are important and are important to the people around you, I think is really, really necessary.
Yes. I mean, I love this. Usually when people speak of activism, and you kind of just spoke to this, it's one dimensional. Mm-hmm. It's, I'm marching for women's rights. I'm marching for the environment.
Right.
But here we have you, and you are such a complex and beautiful person that can tackle the patriarchy, but also tackle many other issues that you have. You know, I think you in particular have an art form that allows you to be flexible with all of this. You know, nobody's saying, like, your poems only have to be about this one subject.
Right.
But on top of that, you also have a talent. So How did you even get into poetry? Like, when did the moment happen of saying, okay, I'm going to perform this and I'm going to do it in front of people and I'm going to say these things that might not be popular?
Right.
How did you start that?
Right. I think it's funny now looking and realizing that I'm a poet because it's something I never thought that I would do at all for a second. I grew up with the worst stage fright ever. I always wrote. I was always just someone with a lot of feelings and a lot of different views on certain topics. And I always felt the need to write, but there's like this transition of bringing your work to a stage and saying it in front of people and dealing with the backlash that that might create. So I think for me, that transition happened by just having really amazing friends and really amazing artist friends around me that just, I always say, I think like there's this moment when you see someone go up onto a stage and just bring their entire self and just open up their heart and just spill everything that they are that is so empowering and just makes, there's like this shift in thought that makes you like, actually, I can do that too. Like, I can be empowered up on a stage and I can make other people feel this way too. And I think for me, like that completely had to do with just the people I was around and the support of the people I was around, reading my stuff and being like, you need to say this out loud. You need to bring this to a stage. And I'm so grateful to them for that. So I would say really more than anything, it was really just really good friends and really supportive, amazing artists.
Oh, I love that. I love that. So, okay, so our podcast is two-part, right? We have the activism, and then we have the hustle.
Oh, yeah.
So complex, right? So complex. So we talk a lot about the activism part. And one thing that I want to ask you before we move on to the hustle part is, you just kind of mentioned a little bit of the topics that you encounter, but what is it that you would say are the biggest things that you tackle through your art?
Definitely. That is a great question. I would definitely say one of my biggest things is always female empowerment. I think it's just so necessary to be a woman and to be loud and to be speaking on issues that are affecting women every single day. I think women are still conditioned to not speak up about things that bother them, are worried about coming off as angry or coming off as aggressive. And I think that's bullshit. I think that's ridiculous. And I think women need to continue to talk about the things that they're going through because it's universal. It's been going on for so long. I also definitely, something that my writing touches on as well, it's a lot about giving voice to the voiceless. I think of my grandmother who lived here for 5 years before she passed away, but never spoke a word of English and never cared to. She was like, I'm here for my family and to give them a better life, but I know this is who I am and I don't care to learn the language, you know?
Yeah.
And to me, that's really empowering. And I think that's really beautiful. But at the same time, I think of all the things that she missed out because of that. Right. So all the things that she went through and all the struggles that she had to deal with. And those struggles are silenced because she never spoke English and she was never able to have a platform to share those things.
Right.
And I think in many ways, being children of these stories, of these people, first generation, second generation, for me being a Latina, I think it's in a way our job to carry those stories. And I think it's our job to tell them. And we have this gift of language that when you think about it, it's such a luxury. It's such a privilege. And so I think those would be the top two things for me that my writing always centers around. I try to expand and write about different things, but I think it's true to form. It always comes back to those two things.
I love that. So I obviously have seen you perform in a couple of spaces and have had that opportunity. And I think it's just very powerful. I also am, like you, a first generation immigrant who has been able to see how the previous generation is silenced by the language barrier that exists. And it's just so powerful when I think of the topics that you tackle and how important they are. And I sometimes wonder, you know, do you ever feel like, okay, now you're a poet.
Mm-hmm.
You did a TEDx talk, you're getting all of these platforms, you have all these opportunities, like you said, you're getting invited into all of these wealthier, wider spaces.
Right.
Does it ever feel like a lot of pressure?
Absolutely, all the time, definitely. I think half the time being invited into these spaces, half of it is like, oh my god, yeah, cool. And then half of it is like, do they know? Like, do they know who I am? Are they sure? Like, and there's this kind of crippling self-doubt. You feel very fake.
Yeah.
You know, and it's definitely something that you need to work through.
Like almost like an imposter.
Imposter syndrome. Yes. Boom. Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Imposter syndrome is exactly what it feels like.
And it's so true. It's like a legitimate thing that a lot of us experience is this imposter syndrome. And
right.
Have you ever had anyone give you any pushback or negative? You know, I think on top of feeling like you're an imposter, you also have forces working against you.
Right.
So have you ever had anyone give you any pushback or like a negative review, I guess, of your poems?
Oh, absolutely. Definitely.
Juicy. Tell me more. Spill the tea.
Well, okay. So, I mean, to be fair, the topics around my poetry, I would say, are usually fairly intense. So I'm usually not surprised by backlash. I think putting certain issues in people's face is as necessary as it is.
It's like therapeutic almost.
Right.
Too.
And I think it's
but shocking.
Right.
But shocking.
Right. But very shocking. Very shocking. And it makes people uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I think good art always makes people uncomfortable. And so I'm never surprised by the backlash. I remember one time I did a feature in New Hampshire and I did a poem about Donald Trump. And these two men came up to me afterwards and were like, we just don't understand. Do you know the history of America?
Oh, my God.
And I was like, yeah, actually, I'm pretty well versed on it. And they were just very offended by me attacking white supremacy. Mm. And which I mean, says more about them than it says about the piece. But anyways, yeah, I think they were just very insulted by it and were looking for an apology from me. But yeah, I'm always very interested in what people have to say about my work. So I was just kind of listening the whole time. I was keeping an open mind. But yeah, it usually gets backlash. I also did a poem at the final stage of the National Poetry Slam this last year.
Okay. And,
yeah, right. And so it went up on Poetry Slam Inc., which is the organization that runs the National Poetry Slam, and I made the mistake of looking at the comment section.
Ooh,
and
oh no.
A lot of the comments were really great. We're like, wow, this is so important, like this needs to be said. Oh, I relate to it so much. And then I went to the very bottom and it was this man named Tony. And he was like,
call him by his name.
Literally American flag emoji picture. Oh, and he was, man, like, America's the greatest country to ever exist. How dare you? You clearly don't know. It was just like this flag waving comment, and I was just like, oh my goodness. So,
my God.
Yeah.
Okay. Flag waving.
Oh.
Should we listen to this poem?
We have to hear it. We have to let everyone needs to get on the same page and understanding of what her messages are and how it sounds, how the poetry sounds.
So let's play a little clip from that poem, the one she just talked about.
Yeah, let's do it.
Oh, say, can you see? Miguel wants to learn the Star Spangled Banner. Miguel was the last fourth grader to migrate into my English as a second language course and is the first to raise his hand for every question. But Miguel views letters in a different way than most. Because there are many words in Spanish that do not exist in English, he learns how to pack them in a suitcase and forget. Because many phrases translate backwards when crossing over from Spanish to English, throughout the whole song, he tends to say things in the wrong order.
Whew. Sheesh.
And now you know what we've been talking about a little bit here.
So, I'm not going to lie, I've seen this poem performed live twice.
Tell me about that.
And I cry every time.
Yeah.
And I cry every time, and there's a couple of things that stick out to me. And the first is this line that says, an accent is a mother tongue not wanting to let go.
Mm-hmm.
And as somebody who was an English as a second language learner, who has no accent. Like, I don't know if you think I have an accent. I sometimes get from different people different things, but I don't think I have an accent. And I remember growing up and being, like, proud of that. Like, people being like, oh, you speak English so well. And they're like, thank you. And now that I'm older and that I've learned everything that I could possibly learn, and there's still so much more to learn, but that I've tried to really learn everything about my culture and assimilation and what it means to be here. Just even listening to myself speak right now, it feels like I'm betraying like my mother tongue and my mother and my home and my people. And then it's also, so there's that, right?
Yeah.
Like that kind of reflection. But then there's also the thought that this beautiful poem that has caused these feelings in me and in, I'm sure in many other people is what gave Angelica some backlash that day.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think probably she was saying like some of her other poems that might be more explicit about like policies and politics are really, I mean, it just gives you such a visceral reaction no matter which poem, I think, of the ones that I watch, no matter which one I've watched of hers, it's like you have this emotional reaction to it, and that makes us, like, that makes you and I feel, like, emotional or, like, sad or in that way. But I think these men that she's talking about that approach, it makes them feel angry.
Yeah.
And that's just – it's kind of hard to understand.
It's very hard to understand. Let's jump back in and see –
how she overcame, like, how she is still pushing forward, doing all of this wonderful art, even though, in spite of the fact that she has people that will not agree with it.
Oh, all right.
Okay,
let's.
It's so interesting being an activist at this time, because there are so many challenges which actually we can jump right into, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like there's so many things holding us back from being great or doing things, and
right.
and half of them, or I would say like a third of them, are systems, right? Like systems that are in place that are holding people back. The other third of them is like our mind. In ourselves, like telling us that we can or can't, you know? And then, like, I would say the other third is like actual obstacles that exist. And you know, you want to own all of these challenges and to be like, no, I do bring something of value.
Right.
And that me, as a person, that's something that I struggle with a lot as a millennial Latina immigrant in the US that's trying to make it. I think a lot of people struggle with that.
Right.
So regardless of your identity, and a lot of people have so many internal struggles about their identity and their value and their work and the actual challenges that come up. So thinking of all these three working together and focusing on the last one, like the actual challenges that come up, how do you deal? What is your biggest challenge even getting to like sit down and write the poem, or and then moving on to the next step of I'm going to actually perform this, right?
Right.
Because poetry is so vulnerable. Like
you're
literally opening your heart and your experience to a bunch of strangers and YouTube trolls.
Yeah, literally. Yeah, you're word vomiting your feelings into an audience. No, definitely. And I totally relate to everything that you just said. I think, yeah, limited belief is so real. And I think, I mean, as far as activism thing, I think on two fronts. I think one thing is that is really important and not often talked about is that the people that are usually talking about these problems in poetry or bringing up social justice issues in poetry, whether it's undocumented people or whether it's you're a minority and you're talking about issues that relate to you or you're fighting for those issues or that's your actual job is to fight for those issues or you're performing art to bring up those issues, in some way you're writing about those or you're fighting for those issues because you relate to those issues, because you come from those issues. And so in many ways, you're still battling the repercussions of those, right?
Yeah.
So you're still a part of those systems, you know? So it's one thing to have to talk about those, but also still be fighting them yourself and to try to be someone being a spokesperson for these issues, but also you're trying to navigate them too, right? And you're still being held back by those things. So I think, yeah, that's one part of it. And I think another part of it, which in many ways is probably a product of, is also a product of those systems, I think, is the limited belief, right? Is thinking of, for me, like, even if I tell my family that I do art full time, they'll still just be like, but what's your real job? So, yes. Like, what pays the bills, Miha? And I would be like, no, like, this is, I can be a poet? What? You know, this is still, mm-hmm. like, a wild idea. And I think we're definitely born into this mentality, of course, of, like, especially here in America, it's like there's this set list of things that you have to do in order to be successful. And it usually doesn't have to do with following your dreams. It never has to do with listening to your passions. It's about, it's different forms of assimilation to become successful and to become to get to a position where you can buy what you want and you can provide for your family.
It's like the American dream. It's honestly the American dream. It's right. Like that's why people come here, right? You want a better life for your family. You want to be able to have a career, not just a job, and you want to be able to provide and then some, right? Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I think it's really hard to even convince yourself that this is something that is possible for you to do, especially when you've never and I think it goes back to representation. When you've never seen someone like you in those positions, how do you picture yourself in that position? How do you accept that you belong in that position? You know, especially when the people around you don't look like you either. So it's something that's really hard, and it's a lot of talking to yourself. It's a lot of convincing yourself of what you deserve. But I think it makes it that much more important, right? To when you're carving out a new space for yourself, you're also carving out a space for so many people that relate to you.
Oh, so what keeps you going? I mean, what is it, you know, what is it that you're like, you know, I'm hearing this and I'm sitting here like, yes, yes, preach, I'm with you, I'm with you. And you know, but like at the end of the day, whoever's listening to this podcast or even me, when I go home, I'm like, but how do I actually get there? Like, this all sounds really great about, you're right. Like, these systems are, you're correct about them. You're correct about the challenges. But how do I overcome these and the other two? Like, myself and the actual, like, bigger systems that are set to kind of, like, set me back. What is it that, like, inspires you or that sparks you to go from the thought of it and the belief of it into the mental process of action and the process of actually writing and performing and constantly putting yourself in these spaces where you're putting your face out there and your name out there and you're going to be on YouTube and you're going to be on TEDx and you know all of that. Like, what is it?
Yeah. When you put it like that. well, actually, me and my friend were actually talking about this. Me and my roommate, she also did a TED Talk recently, and we were just sitting in our room, and sometimes we just do these things, and we look at each other, and we're like, why do we torture ourselves? Like, why do we do this voluntarily? Like, we put ourselves in these anxiety-driven spaces for art, and, like, for why? And I think it's a really good question, you know? I think it's really important. I think, for me, the biggest thing is really the feedback that you get from people. It's really such a driving force. I think I've always felt a fire to write about things that don't sit well with me. I've always kind of had a loud mouth and I've had a big mouth, and it's I'm not the type of person where I can just sit down and watch things that don't sit well with me, you know. And I think that's part of what's kept me going. But also there's this moment when someone goes up to you after you do a piece and is crying or is so emotionally taken back, and they say something to you like, I've never heard my story out loud, or like, wow, I was really moved and thank you so much for giving voice to this issue. And in that moment, there's so many chills, and just thinking about it, like, makes me emotional, but it's so validating in a way that you're just like, you feel like, wow, this is important. This is necessary. And even if it's just that important to that person, right? Like, it still is enough. I can't speak for, like, all artists that do this, but for me, it's enough to keep doing that.
I can't even imagine. I'm just sitting here in, like, awe. Like, I can't even imagine. I mean, I love poetry, and I'm personally a poetry junkie. I go to all of these slams, and I support Mass Sleep. Shout out Mass Sleep. Hey. And stuff. But I think that one of the ways that you know, we're highlighting your first interview, and we're highlighting poetry as activism, which is not really traditional or conventional, but
right.
it's also so effective, right? Activism right. through poetry is so efficient because it touches you in a level that other activism might not.
Right.
You know, like you see a march, or you can give money, and you can do all of these things that are action based, but none of them are like going to hit you at the most vulnerable part of your soul,
right?
The way this poem would,
yeah.
Or the way that this poem will highlight things that you didn't even know you were feeling,
right?
And I'm going to open this door for you, and I think that. One, it's amazing, and two, just articulating other people's stories. Like, sometimes there have been poems that I hear, and I'm like, oh, I didn't even know there was a word for that feeling.
Right.
Like, I didn't even know that that's how I felt until mm-hmm. I sat here and you told me that that's how I was feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And in that, you're sparking activism in others, right?
Yeah.
Like, creating this awakening for many others in a different emotional journey or spiritual journey or just journey of growth, honestly, mm-hmm. especially for younger people.
Mm-hmm.
I think young people that listen to poems are really energized by them and feel like we have to do something about them, and you feel it in the room when you go to like slams, and you feel it in the room when you hear the youth like tell you that they're shooting people in their classrooms,
right.
or that they're shooting their brothers and their sisters in the streets,
right.
And I think the youth does really listen to them. And the other really great efficient thing about it is that you're creating this change across all populations, like
mm.
again, poetry, I think when I was growing up, it was like Robert Frost
right.
and like this poetry that I could not relate to.
Right.
But now that that has changed so much, and
mm-hmm.
so much of our poetry is the voice for our struggles.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, like for the youth especially, it's the voice for the voiceless.
Right.
So the activist hustle, I
yes.
think one of the things that we focus on, like in our generation, is the concept of hustle too.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing that youth can relate to. So mm-hmm. I would love to hear from you. How do you define the hustle?
Mm. The hustle is real, first of all.
Yes.
But hustling, yeah, that's a really good question. For me, hustle is work. Hustle is sweat. Hustle is head down into whatever you know and whatever you believe strongly in enough in doing anything to get there. I think hustle is a fire. I think hustle is doing a lot with little. I think hustle is, you know, you have to have a lot of motivation for one thing to do all of the work that you're doing,
mm-hmm.
To get through all of the bullshit that you're getting through. But I think hustle is always a light at the end of the tunnel. I think hustle is always this fire that's guiding you somewhere that you know is right. I think it's doing whatever you need to do to get to the place where you want to go.
Yes. Poetry snaps. I love that. Okay. Wow. So thank you so much for sharing your
thank
work
you.
With us and how you are an activist. And one of the things that we can do, I think, to support you mm-hmm. is to highlight, right? So what do you have coming up?
Sure. So actually, this June, I'm going to Mexico. I'm going to be there from the 6th to the 10th doing workshops in Mexico City. So that is my next thing that I'm really excited about. I'm doing it for their national slam. So we're going to be doing workshops, and then I'm going to be performing at their slam.
Wow,
really,
yes,
really
bring
cool.
it back to the community.
Yeah. So my dad's family is actually from Mexico, so it's going to be a really personal experience for me, which I'm really, really, really amped about. And then this coming fall, I'm planning a tour, either for the fall or the spring. I'm not really sure yet. I'm getting details, but
so
yeah.
For our listeners that want to watch your work or to know more about you, where do they go?
Sure. So you can hop onto my website, angelicamalamaria.com.
we might have to slow that one down a little bit. Say that website one
it
more time.
Just
angelicamalamaria.
So angelicamalamaria. That's A-N-G-E-L-I-C-A, Mala, M-A-L-A, Maria, M-A-R-I-A.com. And then, of course, I have a lot of work on YouTube. My TEDx talk is on YouTube and other poems from National Slams as well.
Awesome. And if they want to get connected to you personally, they can do that through your website.
Absolutely. Hit me up through there.
Awesome. And we'll, of course, have her link where you can get her book and go on her website posted with this podcast episode. So I think that's it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Awesome. All right. So, Rachel, what did you think of Angelica?
Oh my goodness. Angelica is amazing. I mean, she's such an inspiration and she knows it.
Yeah.
Which is amazing to be able to use that power and channel her. So she's such a positive energy, like being in this space.
Yeah.
And she knows how to use it.
It like took everything in me to not just fangirl over her while she sat here spewing all of this beautiful knowledge. I was just like, yes, queen, you beautiful human being, you leading Latina. Like, I just wanted to pump her up. But I think I think she brought up a couple of things that we should highlight. And I think one of them is, oh my goodness, the notion of activism not being like so siloed, like so, okay, if you're an activist, then that must be all that you are doing and you have to have one cause. And I was just so inspired by how complex and all of the intersections that come to play with that. What did you think about that?
Yeah, I think for a lot of people, activism may not seem accessible, right? If you're not born into power and privilege, which most activists honestly aren't in the end, but it's hard to see yourself as having that power and being an individual and harnessing it, right? So I think that using the storytelling is such a powerful way to like be one person and be an activist.
And an activist to tackle so many causes. I mean, just in that interview, like she brought up, you know, the patriarchy and like the immigrant experience and the Latino experience and the English as a second language experience. And I'm just like, oh my goodness, like you are just killing it on all levels, right?
And she talked about, you don't have to just dedicate your work to the activism or the causes, but you can dedicate your life and your living out your experience and being true to yourself and your authentic self. Like, that is the activism. Oh my gosh. I think that for everyone listening, be yourself. That's it. Activism, step one to being an activist.
Seriously, I think that is my biggest takeaway from that conversation. And, you know, I don't know if I consider myself an activist. Like, I still like feel like I don't own my space fully to even give myself that title. I feel like I'm not worthy of it. But having her sit here and tell me that, like, all I need is to tell myself that I'm worthy of it, I'm like, oh my God, I'm an activist. I'm the best activist in all my world, which is so funny. So I'm a fan of Kanye West. I don't know if I've told you this. Probably have. But one of the things that I appreciate about Kanye is that he's so cocky. And that's how his success has come. It's him saying, like, not getting down, like, is this beat worth it? Like, will this make money? Is the song good? It's like, no, I am the best rapper of all time. And it's like, whoa, dude, calm down. But it's like, sometimes that's what we need. And I think that was my biggest takeaway from that conversation, was her saying, like, it literally just took me saying, I can do this, I belong here, and just stepping into that space, even when you are feeling like an imposter, or even when you are, you know, having those challenges of like your internal self being like, it's not, you know, who's going to care, or this isn't important enough, or, oh, there's going to be so much backlash. There's so many reasons why you shouldn't do something, that the first step is absolutely just saying, no, it matters, and I'm going to do it regardless.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was thinking about, how not that it doesn't matter what people say, but whatever people say, you can still do it.
Yes.
You can still say what is important to you, and your experience is valid. And
I just love her.
But I actually do have a question for you about some things she was talking about. You brought up imposter syndrome, which I've read a little bit about, but like, what does it mean?
Girl, okay, let me tell you. No, so imposter syndrome, and I've never actually looked up the definition, but in my group of friends, we just know what it is, which is like this feeling of
not belonging, of being an imposter in a setting. And the syndrome part, I think, comes from being part of a group. So for me, it would be like a female and a Latina. And, you know, I grew up low income, and I'm first generation. So like all of these, you know, identities that I carry with me contribute to the syndrome of constantly feeling like I'm an imposter when I'm at a board meeting or at a fancy gala or working at the Hancock Tower, you know? And it's like in spaces where there's not a lot of people that look like you or that have shared your experience, you feel like an imposter. And it's so hard. It's like, how do you, you know, and I still struggle with it. And like Angelica was saying, like she just struggles with it. And it's something that a lot of people who have been marginalized struggle with. Like they really do. They struggle with, how do I go into a room full of CEOs when all of them look one way and don't relate? Or how do I own my space? So that's essentially what imposter syndrome is.
Yeah. I can definitely relate to that.
Yeah.
And it's a process, you know?
It's, yeah. And I don't think it ever goes away. I think the beauty of it is that someday maybe this term won't even exist because we have fully diversified all sectors, right? So then nobody's feeling like an imposter because, like Angelica said, there's representation everywhere.
Mm-hmm. And no one feels like they need permission to be their authentic self.
Exactly,
anymore.
Their unapologetic self. So that, yeah, those were my biggest takeaways.
For sure. So with imposter syndrome, I think she brought that up when she was talking about coming into these privileged, these white spaces, these wealthy spaces. And one thing I was wondering, maybe we could talk about how that's hard to not become like a token.
Oh my God.
And the representing a whole group of people to people who don't understand.
Poetry is, like Angelica was saying, like so vulnerable and like something that you're just putting your thoughts into words and you're just saying it out loud and it resonates with a lot of people. And a lot of the poetry comes from the hardships, you know? I think like a lot of the poets that are of color or women or literally, if it's not a happy poem, it's a poem about our internal struggles and the struggles that we face in the world. And most of them are about the systems, right? And so so that in itself, it automatically opens the door for a lot of tokenism to happen. And then you take it further and it's like, yeah, how, like even her, like I said, I was like, you're the leading Latina. And like, here we are. Like she's literally the leading Latina. So any Latina setting that I go to, she's there and she's the poet, you know? And I think it's just going to take time. It's going to take time for us to move away from what is token and truly just what is. Like, did I even answer your question? You like stumped me.
Yes. No, I think it makes a lot of sense that we are on this journey as activists to get to that place, right? Where we don't even have to have definitions for things anymore.
And how do we honor the experience and honor that, like, you know, Angelica is a Latina. Mm-hmm. She is, and she's going to own it. And how do we honor that without making it become
all
like a gimmick?
That. Yeah, exactly.
Oh. The struggle is real, but we'll keep hustling.
We'll keep hustling.
All right.
That's
awesome.
It.
That's a wrap. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We hope that you had just as many takeaways as we did, and we're really excited for the next episode.
Yeah.
And it's time for shout-outs with a special thank you to our team made up of yours truly, your host and producer, Lena Cañon, our director and producer, Rachel Sullivan, our editor and producer, Aaron Taylor, and last but not least, our creator, Brandon Rush. Today we have an extra shout out to our wonderful Amina Chandani, who keeps us looking fresh out in these social media platforms. Yes, with this color scheme, with these banners, with these logos. We appreciate you. You are an artist. And another shout out to Suffolk University for letting us record in your space. Suffolk University alum, holla!
And make sure to follow us on social media. We're on Instagram and Twitter as Activist Hustle. You can also email us at theactivisthustle@gmail.com or find us anywhere where you listen to your podcast. Check out our link below for our website. where you can submit to be a guest or nominate somebody to be a guest.